to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This week, Bereishit. Welcome to Bereishit and to a new year of podcasts from Pardes. You can listen to this podcast through your podcast channel, or you can also check it out and our other podcasts online via Elmad, E-L-M-A-D, .pardes.org.il. So please check out all of our offerings via the web. This week, Bereishit with Rabbi Alex Israel. Rabbi Alex Israel is a member of the Pardes faculty. And now, Rabbi Alex Israel.
Thank you, Larry. This week, we excitedly open our Chumash once again. And we start with Bereishit. We begin the Torah yet again with a great sense of excitement and love, as we read the familiar and famous story of the creation of the world. The creation of the world, Bereishit, in 6 days, and on the seventh day he rested. I want to study our parsha, and I'm going to do an overview, in many ways, of the entire parsha Bereishit, all five and a bit chapters of it. And I'm going to try and do this by tracing a single word. Sometimes a single Hebrew word can tell us a huge amount about the narrative that we're dealing with. And in this case, the word I want to deal with is the word good, tov, and its corollary, I have to say, the word bad, ra. And this word is woven carefully like a beautiful thread coming up embroidered in different places in the fabric of our Parsha Shavua. And I think we'll see that this word tells us a great deal about what we're about to read. Let's begin from the beginning. The creation story is told in 6 days, where each day is carefully transcribed from a literary perspective, beginning with the words Vayomer Elokim, and God spoke, or God said, and ending with Vayhi Erev Vayhi Voker, Yom, whichever day it is. And it was evening and it was morning, the first day, the second day, the third day, the fourth day. Each day God creates something new. So on the first day, Vayomer Elohim Yihi Or, let there be light. On the second day, Vayomer Elohim Yihi Rakia, let there be a firmament, which is then called the heavens, the sky. On the third day, Vayomer Elohim Yikavu Hamayim, let the waters gather, etc., etc. But one of the wonderful features within this rigid framework is that each day God looks at what he has made and he sees that it is good. With the lights, in chapter 1, verse 4, he's made the light, Vayomer Elohim Yihi Or, let there be light, Vayihi Or, and the light, and indeed there was, Vayar Elohim Et Haor Ki Tov, he saw the light was good. Interestingly enough, the second day doesn't have any Ki Tov, but the third day, Tuesday, has double Kitov, because this is the day when the work of the water is finished, and God sees that is good. And then, on the third day, when the vegetation is put on the world, once again, Kitov. On the fourth day, we also have Kitov, as the sun and moon and the stars are created. It says, Vayar Elokim Kitov. On the sixth day, with the fish and the birds, and again with the animals on the sixth day. And as a conclusion to all of creation, we have on the sixth day, Vayar Elokim et kol asher asa v'hine tov me'od. God saw everything he had made, and it was indeed exceedingly good. Of course, this makes a very, very nice pattern, whereby there is Kitov 7 times within these days. Interestingly enough, on the third day and the sixth day, we have a double Kitov. So that creates a nice structure between the first 3 days, which establish the Shamayim Va'aretz, the heaven and earth, and the next 3 days, which establish the Tzva'am. We're used to the line, Vayechulu HaShamayim Va'aretz V'chol Tzva'am. God finished the heavens and the earth. That's the first 3 days. And then on the backdrop of that heaven and earth, we have what moves within that spatial place. The sun, the moon, and the stars on day four. The birds and the fish, day five. And the animals and man. That is the Tzva'am, the hosts. And so the first 3 days end with a double Kitov. And the sixth day also ends with a double Kitov, and it was good. I have to say that this statement, it was good, is a major one, because when you look at mythology, and particularly Babylonian mythology, there is no impression that the world was planned with any specific master plan in mind. The world happens by accident, usually as a result of struggles and fights and wars by the gods. And there is no understanding that the world is good. And this, the first thing I'd like to point out is that this notion that is imprinted seven times in the creation chapter is that God sees our world as a positive place, a place which is good for humanity, good for the fact that it's there. And I think that is part of what gives the tremendous optimism to the Torah. One of the features, what exactly does it mean that God saw that it was good? And maybe I should add, why on day two do we not have the phrase that God saw it's good, and we have a double on day three? The rabbis explain that Kitov always indicates not only that something is good, but that something is complete. And that's why we don't see it on day two. You see, what God is doing with the water is this. There seems to be water everywhere. The opening introductory lines of Bereshit tell us that there is darkness on the face of the deep, and the Spirit of God, or the wind of God, hovers on the face of the water. There is water everywhere. God has to make space for there to be a world. The first thing he does is he divides the waters, pushing some water up to what in ancient times they thought was some sort of vault high in the above the heavens, and then water below on earth. So the water is divided, and that's what he does on day two. It creates the heavens, which we call Shamayim, which beautifully could be read as Shamayim. There is water. There's water up, there's water down, but here there is no water. And that Shamayim is the heavens or the sky, which is an empty space. On the third day, God completes the water by pushing the water on the earth into the sea and revealing the dry land, which is then called Eretz. And in this way, we have the Shamayim and Eretz, the heavens and the earth. And because the work with the water spans the whole of day two and half of day three, only halfway through day three do we hear the first Kitov. Kitov indicates a sense of completion. The second Kitov on day three is because now the land becomes covered in vegetation and trees and beautiful plants. So that's where we get the double Kitov. But the upshot of all of this is that Kitov is not just saying that it is good, it is also saying that what has been created is complete. The reason why I'm mentioning this is because when we read through the story of man, we're surprised to find that when the human is created, man and woman, there is no mention of Kitov. Man is not considered to be good. Is man not good? I mean, this seems a little strange. Where is the goodness of man? And I'd like to read a passage from the Meshech Chachma of Rav Meir Simcha HaKohen of Dvinsk, a famous Torah commentary, where he makes a wonderful comment, and he says, Lo katav vayar Elokim al ha'adam bifrat kamo b'chol ha'nivra'im, rak klalo b'chol asher asa. That indeed that God did not say, and God saw that it was good for man. In fact, all he did was he included it in the totality of all the creations. And we wonder why, and he says, Bezer ramuz sod ha'bchira. This is due to the fact that humankind has free choice. She'ein ha'yidiya machrachat ha'bchira. Because God's foreknowledge doesn't determine any outcome of human action. And therefore, with every single action, it says that God saw. Because God could see what they were. They were as they are. The animal instinct and the animal nature remained fixed in place. The fixed geological aspects of the universe remained in place. But human beings? Human beings can always change. Human beings are a loose cannon who can be tov. But here's the implication. They can also be not good. And this is where I start looking into chapter 2. And chapter 2 tells the story of the Garden of Eden. One interesting use of this phrase tov is that when man is alone, man doesn't realize he's alone. He's quite happy in the garden. But God says, Lo tov heyota adam levado. It is not good for man to be alone. Again, I guess the idea here is that a human being by themselves, a man without a woman, is that in a state of lo tov, we need partnership. We need, as it's called, ezer kenegdo. Our partner is called an ezer, a help, kenegdo, but yet an opposing force. We have to feel that we also have assistance, but we also have pushback. And this is the creation of a life partner. So the idea that Bereshit puts that human beings are not perfect, because human beings are not finished. Human society has work to do. And the first thing that has to happen is that humankind has to find their partner. In the story of Perek Bet, man finds woman, and there is the wonderful statement, Al kein ya'azov ish et aviv ve'et imo ve'davak be'ishto. Therefore, a man will abandon his father and mother and cleave to his wife, v'hayu lebasar echad. They will become a single flesh. Let me maybe make a statement about this. First of all, it's fascinating that when man finds woman, man does not find woman in order to procreate, in order to have children and populate the world. The first primary and fundamental association between man and woman is the idea of companionship. Just like man bursts into song and says, she is the bones of my bones and the flesh of my flesh. And indeed they become one flesh because they become united. They become into a single union. I think that's one interesting thing. But a second thing which is fascinating about this story where man meets woman is this. It says, therefore man will leave his father and his mother. From the perspective of the parents, maybe we can look at it and understand how revolutionary this is, because, of course, a father and mother, a parents, raise their child. Their child is indeed their flesh and blood, bears their DNA, and they raise them to a certain age. And at a certain point, this young man or this young woman turn around to their parents and say, sorry, I've fallen in love with somebody else. I want to leave you, even though you indeed are my biological connection. And they go and make a union with somebody who they have no DNA in common with. They have no biological connection with. They abandon their parental home. And then together, these two people, the Chatan and Kala, the man and wife, form this union which is called by the Torah, Basar Echad. And this is indeed an incredible statement about the family, which is mentioned here by Torah. Lotov, it is not good for man to be alone. We need companionship, we need partnership, we need to create loving homes. But of course, here in chapter 2, there is another example of Tov, and this is this looming tree, the Eitz Hadat Tovara, the tree of knowledge of good and bad. And this already gives us the sense that there is potential for good in man and potential for bad. Or, I'll put it differently, man is going to soon learn, the minute man, and woman, I have to say, it's primarily woman first, eat from the tree of knowledge of good and bad. We call it the tree of knowledge, but it's really the tree of knowledge of good and bad. And I would like to say there is no magical quality in this tree. This tree is a test. It's a test of obedience. And if we listen, it would be good. And if we didn't listen, it would be bad. And indeed, this opens the possibility. You know, Maimonides asks the wonderful question, how can it be that God would forbid us that God would restrict us from eating from the tree of knowledge of good and bad isn't the finest aspect of humanity, our ability to discern between good and bad. Maimonides' answer is fascinating. He says that before we ate from the tree of knowledge, there wasn't really good and bad. He says there was more like emet v'sheker, truth and evil. For example, we would look at something wrong or something right in a sense of absolutes, right? Like black is black and white is white. You can't, muddle them up. There was no gray area. There was no moral dilemmas. Suddenly, with eating from the tree of knowledge, it didn't become emet and sheker, truth and false. It became good and bad. This means a certain autonomy, a certain ethical decision-making on the part of man. How did that happen? It happened because when the woman broke the rules and ate from the tree, when the man ate the fruit that she gave her, man and woman decided to go their own way, to exercise their free choice, to decide to make their own moral decisions. And ever since then, morality isn't an absolute. Morality is relative. Each society decides their own morality. But I think primarily in the story is this idea that, as we say in Sefer Dvarim, I've shown you before you life and death, good and bad. Uvacharta b'chayim, choose life. Human beings are autonomous. They have choice. We have a choice, just like that tree, between Tov and Ra. On to the next story. The story of Cain and Abel. And probably many of us are familiar with the story where Abel's sacrifice is accepted and Cain's is not. And Cain gets very upset. He gets really, really depressed. And God says to him, Im teitiv se'et. God tries to counsel him. And he says to him, Lama charalach? Why are you so upset? Lama naflu panecha? Why have your face fallen? Why are you ashamed? Halo im teitiv se'et. If you, and here's that word tov, if you do more good, you can raise your face. God is encouraging Cain that indeed his sacrifice will be accepted only if he becomes teitiv. He becomes better. He needs to do more tov. We don't know if he did anything bad, Cain. The truth is, we have no clue. The text doesn't tell us. All it tells us is that he's given this counsel. Im teitiv se'et, if you improve, you will be able to lift up your face. V'im lo teitiv, but if you choose not to improve, put it this way, if you choose not to work on yourself, lepetach chatat rovetz, sin crouches at the door, and you will desire it, v'elecha tshukato v'atatim sholbo. Professor Uriel Simon, in a lecture that I heard from him at Paradise, said that what's really happening here is that Cain is being given the choice to either work on himself and improve, and then God will accept his sacrifice, or here's the other option. He can decide to that sin crouches at the door. What's the sin? He can look at himself as a victim. Oh, God was bad to me. He can look at himself as being angry with his brother and being furious that his brother got ahead. And take out that frustration on the other person. This is a choice that we always have. We always have a choice to play the victim or to really work on ourselves, to blame our misfortune on all, on our birth, on our lack of talent, on our boss, on our children, on our wife, on our, I don't know, whatever it might be, and to curse the day that we were born. Or we can pick our lives up and make it better of it. God says, Im teitiv, go improve your life. Then you will have uplift. Im lo teitiv, but if you choose not to work on yourself, sin crouches at the door, you'll blame everybody else. And of course, what does Cain do? Indeed, he doesn't choose the route of tov. In fact, he chooses the route of trying to get ahead by killing his rival, by killing Abel, and getting rid of the opposition. This, of course, is one of the most fundamental, heinous crimes of civilization. And we see once again the option of Tov is open to humankind, but humankind chooses not to take it. And here I reach the end of our parsha. In the final scene, the final maftir that we read, because in many ways, Parshat Bereshit is a very tragic tale. You know, it begins with chapter 1 and chapter 2, and the creation and the beginning of man, and everything's so bright and everything is so tov. But then we have chapter 3, the sin in the Garden of Eden, where man refuses to listen to God, mankind. Then the first murder, Cain. Then the next story, which I haven't gone through because it doesn't have the word tov, but the story of Lamech, where Lamech establishes a violent society, and this all sort of culminates in the violence which happens at the chapter 6, where we see that the Bnei Elohim, if I read it like Rashi, the sons of the judiciary, the people who are meant to be the forces of law and order in society, simply take Benot HaAdam ki Tovot Heina, they see, and here's that word Tov, but now Tov hasn't become an ethical good. Tov means that they've seen the daughters of man, and they see them as pretty and beautiful, and now they take women, Mikol HaSheh Bacharu. They simply, these are the sons of the judges, these are the forces of law and order, who just simply feel that they can have their way with women in their society. And it's when all of this happens, that God says, and I'll read the lines, Vayar Hashem ki rabbah ra'ata Adam ba'aretz. God saw that great was the evil of man in the world, v'chol yetzer machshevot libo, and all of the thoughts, all of the drives in his heart, rak ra kol hayom. If the world began with tov, God seeing good and good, here God sees how evil man is, ra'ata Adam, and he sees that man's thoughts are only evil, ra, the opposite of tov, all day. And at this point, God says he regrets, he changes his mind about making the world, vayitatzev libo. God was tremendously upset in his heart, and he decides that he's going to have to press the reset button, and this is the entrance point to the flood. This is where God announces that he is going to destroy the world and start again with Noah. So what I've tried to do is actually do an overview of Parashat Bereshit, but using this exceptional vocabulary which traces the optimism of creation and the sort of disappointment of God, which vayitatzev libo, it sort of hurt his heart. That word etzev is a very key word as well in Sefer Bereshit, because of course etzev, sadness, bitterness, pain, was part of the curse to Adam and the curse to Eve. Be'etzem til dibanim, Eve was told, you will bear children in pain. And man was told, Be'etzavon tochalene, you'll eat bread in bitterness. And now that bitterness, which came to humankind as a result of their sin, has now been transposed onto God, Ve'etzav libo, because he sees that instead of man being filled with that good which he had hoped for, man is filled with ra, with evil, kol yetzem machshavot libo, rak ra kol hayom. Parashat Bereshit doesn't come to tell us how the world came into being. Parashat Bereshit comes to tell us about the moral landscape. It comes to tell us about human psychology. It comes to tell us about human society. And I always see it, the first and opening parasha, opening with such lovely fanfare, telling us that our world is indeed good. As I said, as opposed to mythology, as opposed to, if you read, I don't know, books about evolutionary models of creation, if you read Sapiens, there is no, science cannot say that the world is good. At the most, world is morally neutral. At the worst, it is survival of the fittest, and we eat each other alive. But you know what? Our Torah has a different message. And the message we're given is indeed the world is good, but it is in human capability to be tov or ra. And therefore, we are reading our prehistory. Before the flood, we don't really know what the world was like. The ages of people is like in the 900 years. It seems a world very different to ours. But in this sort of mythical world, in this world which is so different from our own and yet so the same because the psychology seems to match the psychology of our own, we learn about the fact that human beings can really be tov or ra, and therefore this throws out a real challenge to human societies to ensure that they don't indulge in violence, don't indulge in a violent way of acting and bring the world into corruption and destruction, but instead that we have the possibility to really make the world vayar Elokim ki tov, that we will be able to see the world and say, indeed, it is good. I wish you all, to all of our listeners, Shabbat Shalom, and I think we can still say, Eshana Tova.
Thank you, Rabbi Israel. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.